When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Alex Kennedy Podcast, brought to you by BasketballNews.com. Most of the notable NBA free agents are off the board. There are still some restricted free agents that are available, but there have been a ton of deals, and we wanted to break down the moves that have already happened. To help me do that, I am joined by BasketballNews.com's writer and editor, the great Spencer Davies. Spencer, thanks for joining me. How are you?
The great Spencer Davies? I'm all about this introduction.
The greatest Spencer Davies.
I appreciate it, AK. What's up, man?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you hanging out with me. This has been an interesting offseason. It's funny because while all the top free agents are pretty much off the board, aside from a few restricted players, there's so much that's still up in the air with the whole Kevin Durant situation. And we can get into that a little bit, but I know we each have chosen four winners and four losers of the offseason so far. I do want to say it's always a bit premature to name winners and losers a few days after agreements are, teams and players reach agreements, but it's just based on our projections and kind of how we think some of these contracts might look a year or two from now. So do you want to kick it off and give your first winner?
Yeah, sure. First one that comes to mind for me is honestly the Los Angeles Lakers. And it's kind of weird hearing me say that because, you know, I've gone at them over the last couple of years, especially after they had won a championship and completely just retooled their roster for no reason. Going back to our buddy Atan Thomas over basketballnews.com talking about big man bias, you know, letting go Dwight Howard, letting go JaVale McGee, and instead they brought in Montrezl Harrell. We all know how that went. And then the season after, you know, they just got older. And this time around, they've gotten much younger. You know, you bring in Lonnie Walker IV, who I think could be one of the most, you know, underrated steal type of free agency acquisitions that they could have made. Thomas Bryant was a nice little shrewd move. Him going back to where he started his career, that's awesome. Juan Toscano-Anderson, somebody that has championship pedigree, has been around guys like Steph Curry, Draymond Green, is really, you know, coming to his own as one of those glue guy types. And I'm also a big fan of Damian Jones as well. Just his ability to rim run and block shots and also finish those high handoffs. So I'm a big fan of that. You know, they go out and get Max Christie in the draft. And you're seeing some guys like Scottie Pippen Jr. kind of, you know, shining a little bit in the early summer league action. And the only guy they lost was Malik Monk. And I think they've replaced that production. So getting younger, getting more athletic, getting guys that can run instead of, you know, go out there in wheelchairs.
That's what this team needed for sure. You know, younger, more athletic. I think it's cool too that some of the players they brought in have past relationships. Like I know Troy Brown Jr. and Lonnie Walker are good friends. They've been friends since high school. I know at one point Troy and Lonnie were talking about doing a podcast together. So that's pretty fun. I wonder if now they're in LA, we're going to see that. I know Troy and Thomas Bryant are also really good friends from their time in Washington. I think they were, you know, the two closest, that was like Troy's closest friend on the team. On the Wizards. So some guys that already have some connections, which is kind of cool. But yeah, I agree.
BBM alumni, by the way, Mr. Troy Brown Jr.
Yes, he wrote for us and did vlogs. He's fantastic. One of the nicest, you know, kids in the NBA. He's an awesome, awesome guy. I'm happy for him. My first winner is the Boston Celtics. Adding Malcolm Brogdon without having to give up much at all. You know, that trade, I think most people were shocked when they saw the return in that trade just because they gave up, you know, four players, but really the only one that was really a rotation player for them was Daniel Tice. Aaron Nesmith, a nice young prospect, but to give up those four players and then a 2023 first round pick, they're really not missing a lot in terms of production. When you look at the guys they gave up and then what Brogdon can bring, I think our Ethan Fuller did a great job breaking down just how he fits with his team in an article on basketballnews.com. But Brogdon has been fantastic when healthy. The only issue for him is just he's had so many injuries he's dealt with, but he's a great two-way guard that can really, really help them. I think it makes them much scarier. To also go out and add Danilo Gallinari for the mid-level exception is also a huge addition. So I think Brad Stevens has shown he's done a fantastic job since taking over this executive role. Initially, when that was announced, people were surprised because he didn't have any front office experience. It seemed like a mistake to move him from a coaching role to an executive role. But our Tommy Beer wrote a great article about how he's really been hitting home runs since he took over that that front office.
Flip that thing upside down, man. I mean, you talk about even Derek White getting the trade, you know, over from San Antonio, and you talk about bringing Daniel Tice back. Obviously, Tice isn't there anymore. He's in Indiana. But just flipping that roster upside down and keeping the core intact, just a wonderful job done by Brad Stevens, hiring Ime Udoka, sticking with it instead of succumbing to pressure when they were under 500 by the turn of the new year. And then boom, they flipped the switch, became the best defense in basketball. And then you just kind of reap the rewards. Now they add in a guy like Malcolm Brogdon, who's going to be able to take some of the playmaking duties off of Marcus Smart. I think it's still going to be more of a split than people think. Malcolm Brogdon isn't going to be just the guy with the ball in his hands. You obviously have Jason Tatum, who is operating as a playmaker now. Marcus Smart doing the same thing, but Brogdon's going to add a shooting element. He's also going to add a driving element where he can sink the defense in and kick out to some shooters like Danilo Gallinari, who they just brought in. So I like those two additions a lot. And as you just mentioned, it did not take much to get him there.
Yeah, I love it. To be able to add those kind of contributors for very little when you're already a team that was in the NBA Finals. I mean, they're looking really good entering next season.
Steph Curry's record-breaking three-pointer, Jason Tatum's buzzer-beating alley-oop, Ja Morant's poster dunk, NBA Top Shot is where the greatest moments from NBA history are turned into officially licensed digital collectibles. NBA Top Shot has evolved trading cards and made it easier to buy, sell, and collect by removing the hassle of grading, shoeboxes, and shipping fees. You can buy or sell moments in a few clicks and access them at any time on your phone or computer. Your collection is always at your fingertips. Start collecting Top Shot moments in any way you want. Collect rookie moments from future stars like Evan Mobley and Cade Cunningham. Collect throwback moments from former NBA stars like Shaq and Allen Iverson. Or collect moments from your favorite team to gain access to exclusive perks. Grab your starter pack today, and Top Shot will give you $20 back to start your collection and pick up some of your favorite moments in the marketplace. Go to about.nbatopshot.com/bballnews and get in the game today. That's about.nbatopshot.com/bballnews.
Who's your next winner?
My next winner is PJ Tucker. My man made a lot of money. He's 37 years old. His good friend Daryl Morey decided to pay him up 3 years, $31 million, going over to the Philadelphia Rock. Just kidding. The Philadelphia 76ers to join up with Joel Embiid. I like the Sixers overall with what they've done. And that's kind of an honorable mention for me. I just had to say PJ Tucker because just earning 10 plus million annually at his age is just an incredible accomplishment, especially knowing how his career started, how long it took him to get to this point. It's just really admirable the job that he's done over the years. As a guy who's going to give you some tough minutes, he's going to knock down corner threes. He added a little bit of a float game with the Heat this past season, and he's done a really solid job just as a pro, being that kind of enforcer type of guy. So I'm a big fan of, you know, PJ Tucker getting that type of deal, but also Philly being able to add De'Anthony Melton at the draft night. I thought that was a nice little shrewd move for them. Yes, they're going to be missing out on some backup centers here, but I'm one of those guys that's intrigued by Charles Bassey and by Paul Reed, and they obviously are going to have to step up this season. Paul Reed, we saw playing in the postseason a little bit last year when DeAndre Jordan really wasn't helping too much coming off the bench, or when he was starting, actually, in fact, when Embiid was out. But Danny Green, we saw, was a little bit... He was looking a little bit aged, and then he went down with the injury, tragically, obviously, and hopefully he does well in Memphis. But De'Anthony Melton makes him younger. He's a good two-way player. And he's going to really, really bolster that bench well.
Yeah, I think PJ Tucker is very interesting just because, you know, last year he earned $7 million. Now he's going to jump up to $10.4 million, followed by $11 million. And then at age 40, he has a $11.5 million player option. I mean, he's in great position right now. And actually, my next player is kind of similar. I chose JaVale McGee as a winner. He signed a three-year $20.1 million deal with the Dallas Mavericks. He's 34 years old. So I was kind of thinking the same thing as you, where, you know, to be able to get that three-year deal and that security, he also has a player option in the final year. So at age 37, he can either get earn a guaranteed $6 million or he can opt out and weigh his options. I think that's great for a guy like JaVale McGee, who has had the most interesting career. I mean, it wasn't long ago that everyone was clowning on JaVale, and, you know, he had the whole Shaqtin' a Fool reputation, and, you know, he was saying it was hurting his career and teams weren't wanting to sign him. You know, he kind of bounced around and had a rough time, but now three-time NBA champion JaVale McGee is going to be making, you know, $6 million at age 37. So I think that's a great deal for him. I get it for Dallas too. They needed a shot blocker. They wanted that kind of championship experience. So yeah, I think it's interesting that he was able to sign that three-year $20 million deal. Great for JaVale. So kind of in the same light as Tucker, I have McGee as a winner.
Fascinating career arc, as you just mentioned, man. And the job that he's done as just someone that can come in for 15 minutes and just uplift an entire unit. Like, the way that he brings the energy, blocks shots, he's fast when he gets up and down the floor. He's a big guy. He's going to be enough of an intimidating factor for when guys come into the paint, he's going to alter shots. He's just gotten better and better as his years have gone on. And for this Dallas team in particular, I think it's exactly what they've been missing. It's like,
yeah, I totally agree.
He's going to have the opportunity to start. And obviously, you know, Christian Wood's going to be the one that's going to move over to the four in that case. But he's going to have the opportunity to start. He's going to have lob after lob from Luka, man. And that just fits exactly the way he plays. Now, is he going to get 25 to 30 minutes a night? We're going to find out. But I think that he's more than capable of being a starting center in this league, having the experience he has had, and just going through the trials and tribulations that he's gone through. And I mean, I saw it in Cleveland, man. He was so much fun here. He was a great locker room leader. You know, any of that outside noise that you were just talking about, he's just, you know, kind of taking it in stride and gone against his critics.
Yeah, 100%. It's been really cool to see how he kind of developed and overcome some of those perceptions or, you know, negative views of him.
Three-time champion, man.
Yeah,
shoot,
phenomenal career. And then again, how many players at age 34 years old are signing a three-year deal with raises from where they were, you know, what they were earning a year or two before? I mean, it's really cool to see what he's doing. He's proven his value still, that, you know, he still has a lot left in the tank. So I definitely think he's a winner. You could argue that Dallas overpaid, but I think for JaVale, there's no question that's a win.
For sure. For sure.
Who's your next winner?
My next winner, and this one might be a little bit, you know, some people might be up for debate here just because it's not like earth-shattering moves, but I do like what the Blazers have done this offseason. You go out, you make the trade for Jeremy Grant, and as we've seen, by the way, first-round picks are up for grabs. Unprotected ones at that. We saw what happened with the Rudy Gobert deal, four picks going back to Utah. We saw the deal with DeJounte Murray. It took three picks and I think a swap to go to San Antonio in the Atlanta trade. So for them to not have to part with too much draft capital for Jeremy Grant, somebody who's going to come in, he's going to be able to take some of the load off of Dame as a scorer. He's obviously going to make him better on the defensive end. He's obviously a veteran who's been around the block a little bit, knows how to play the game. He's not going to be the number one option, but as the number two or number three, I think Jeremy Grant fits in perfectly with this Blazers team. And then you go out and you add Gary Payton the second last week. And that's somebody who, one, has earned his salary. What a career arc he's had, just starting off, you know, overseas and then coming over to the G League. And, you know, Kelsey O'Brien, who did a beautiful feature for us not too long ago, a year and a half ago, about him just trying to make his way up and get to, you know, the promised land. And he found a home in Golden State and he was able to really relish and take advantage of that opportunity. So Gary Payton, we know what he's going to bring to the table. He's going to scrap. He's going to be able to give you some some burst in the open floor. Shooting wise, he's done, you know, a much better job. And defensively, he's going to be in your grill just like his old man was. So you have that. You have those two. The only guy you're losing is Joe Ingles. But more importantly, you lock up Anthony Simons for a long time. You lock up Yusuf Nurkic for a long time. Josh Hart is there. You know, Nasir Little's still there. Keon Johnson was a first-round pick last year that they acquired from the Clippers in the Norman Powell deal. And Keon Johnson's somebody that can develop. Brandon Williams, damn, dude, he averaged like 17 points a game. I know that there was no one on the roster, but he averaged like 17 points a game when he had his opportunities. So I like that a lot. You know, you take the unknown prospect in Shaedon Sharpe, who, for all we know, could have been a top three pick in this year's draft. So the Blazers, I think, did a good job. They were patient. They found their way to make their roster better, and they didn't lose much.
No, I totally agree with you. I think they did a great job. And you could tell, I mean, they're trying to improve their defense. Last year, they were 29th in the NBA in defense, allowing 114 points per 100 possessions. So, you know, GP2 is obviously a huge help there. Jeremy Grant could help there. So pretty clear they're trying to compete and put some pieces around Dame Lillard and improve that defense. So, yeah, I like what they did. My next winner is the Houston Rockets. And people might be thinking they haven't really made a whole lot of moves. The reason I have them as a winner is because not only do they have an exciting young core, I like what they're assembling there and just, you know, the potential that that group has. They have the Brooklyn Nets first round picks in 2024 and 2026. Plus, they can swap first rounders with Brooklyn in 2023, 2025, and 2027. So when they made that James Harden trade, you know, initially people were thinking, oh my God, this Nets team is so loaded. They have this crazy trio. You know, how many championships will Brooklyn win? Obviously, didn't work out for the Nets, and we'll get to them in a bit.
Let's continue to judge trades, by the way, as soon as they happen. That's a really smart way to look at things.
Yeah, I mean, and you could get honest right now for prematurely judging moves, you know, multiple days after they've happened. But yeah, this is why you have to go back and you know, revisit some of these moves a few years later, because I think this move was a huge win for the Rockets. I don't think anyone predicted how quickly this trio in Brooklyn would implode, but here we are. I mean, obviously that situation is still up in the air. We don't know what's going to happen with KD, you know, with Kyrie. Is the season going to start with these guys still on the roster and then we see a trade at a later date? That's all up in the air. We're going to get to the Nets here in a little bit. But Houston is in a great position owning their first round picks and being able to swap with them. It really kind of prevents the Nets from tanking. You know, if they still have their first round picks, they could trade away, you know, these guys for just young assets and say, look, we're just going to blow it up and completely rebuild. But I think one of the reasons we've heard reports from Jake Fisher of Bleach Report and some others that the Nets want win now pieces is because if they tank, then that just means the Rockets get better picks. So there's really not a whole lot of incentive for them to go super young here. But the Rockets, I mean, when they saw that tweet from Woj about KD requesting a trade, how excited was that front office?
Yeah, seriously.
I think Houston is in a great position.
Houston got a treasure chest of capital. Like, and you think about their future and their core. You know, you had right. Jabari to all of these guys. Jalen Green looked good in the second half of the season. Alperen Şengün, Josh Christopher. You know, they've got some pieces to start this thing out. And when you add more first-round picks and more talent to that, more young talent to that, it's just automatically you feel better about it. And it took a year and a half for people to see that. But now that things have gone crumbling a little bit over in Brooklyn, now the Rockets people can see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, and we saw, you know, Houston had, it was three first-round picks in this year's draft. So they added three more rookies. Obviously, we know about Jabari Smith. They also added Terry Eason and
Ty Washington.
Yep. I mean, they had a great draft this year, too. So they're going to have so many prospects. We talked about the Thunder. Like, how are they going to be able to use all of these picks? Because they're just going to have so many rookies and young players on the roster. Houston's kind of in the same boat, where they already have a really impressive young core with a lot of talented pieces. And now they have a lot of first round picks coming.
Usman Garuba is a part of that. And we haven't even seen him play.
Yeah, he was actually one of the guys that our Ethan Fuller wrote about in his article about 10 guys that have something to prove in summer league, basically saying, you know, with the competition that was kind of brought in this offseason in terms of rookies, he needs to kind of show something in order to carve out some minutes in the rotation and improve his value a bit. That's going to happen. Whenever you have this many young players, when you talk about Houston, OKC, there's going to be competition because there's not a ton of slots for these young guys to all fit into. So they're going to have to get a look at all these guys, figure out their most valuable pieces, who they want to build around and view as kind of a cornerstone going forward. And yeah, I mean, they have tons of first round picks to find those kind of guys. So, I mean, I think it's kind of like OKC, where we could be looking at this Rockets team 5, 6, 7 years from now, just thinking this is an absolute juggernaut. And we point to that Harden trade as the reason why, or one of the reasons why.
Mm-hmm. No question. All right, let's wrap up the winners here.
Who's your final winner?
And it's not because of the money. It's just because of the situation. I'm going to say John Wall. John Wall. I don't know if he's going to start. It's either him or Reggie Jackson, obviously, with the Clippers. I think that adds, you know, some great value to the point guard position for them. Somebody who's able to facilitate and get to the rim. You're obviously going to get, you know, Kawhi Leonard back. They lock up Robert Covington. It's not been a very loud offseason for the Clippers. But I think bringing in John Wall, for John himself, just to have that opportunity after a year and a half or so not playing basketball, he was very professional in Houston. I think he couldn't have worked that situation out any more better. He was there for the guys, even though he didn't play like much at all, not even a single game, I believe, in that last season. But he was very professional about things. I think there was a mutual understanding between him and Raphael Stone of what both parties wanted. And eventually, you know, you give back, what was it, $6, $7 million. You put yourself in position to get to a team that's going to contend next year. Boy, by the way, is that Pacific Division going to be a bloodbath. But that, I think, is a huge move for John Wall because he's just going to have the chance to play and he's going to have minutes. I think Ty Lue is great at harnessing types of talents like this. And I think he's going to show us that, you know, with that year off, he's going to be in great shape and he's going to have something to prove.
I totally agree. And people don't remember, you know, that last year we saw him, not this past season, but the year before in Houston, he actually didn't look that bad. Like his efficiency, you know, was pretty rough. He didn't shoot the ball super well, but he averaged 20.6 points, 6.9 assists, 3.2 rebounds, 2 threes, and a steal, and nearly one block. The last game we saw from him, the last time he was on an NBA court, he put up 27 points, 13 assists, 3 rebounds, 2 blocks, and a steal against the Clippers. So, I mean, this is a guy that still has a lot left in the tank, and they got him on a great deal. I mean, it's a low-risk, high-reward move. I love it for John Wall and for the Clippers. I think they're both – you can consider both of them winners. It's kind of a win-win situation. So, for Wall to be able to leave Houston and join a contender, that's huge for him. And yeah, I mean, the Clippers get a quality piece and there's not a ton of risk involved either. So yeah, I like that selection. My final winner is Lu Dort. Rather than earning $1.9 million this season, which I think a lot of us assumed he was going to be on that deal, he had a team option and he was viewed as one of the biggest bargains in the NBA. You know, one of the better perimeter defenders. He's shown flashes offensively and really played well before his injury last season, especially in the last handful of games. You know, was averaging, I want to say, like 20 points per game, really doing a great job, or 23 points per game, something along those lines. He was really crushing it and, you know, showed strides on the offensive end while still providing that great perimeter defense. So it seemed like he was going to have a $1.9 million salary. Instead, the Thunder declined his team option and they were able to reach an agreement on a 5-year deal worth $87.5 million. So, you know, 2 weeks ago, he may have thought he was going to earn $1.9 million this year. Now, instead, he's earning $15 million. So I think it's pretty safe to say he's a winner. I think he's a really fun young player. I know our Nekias Duncan's a huge fan of his. It was cool to see him kind of get that payday. And, you know, the Thunder could have let him play on that, you know, team option. But I believe the problem is he would have hit unrestricted free agency next offseason. So they didn't want to risk that. Instead, they declined it, made him a restricted free agent, and they were able to reach that agreement. So
well executed, Mr. Presti.
Very well executed. And I mean, another reason Lu Dort is a winner, we've seen restricted free agency can be really brutal for a lot of players like DeAndre and Colin Sexton. There's guys going through that right now where it kind of scares away different bidders. teams don't know what to really pay you because they're afraid teams are just going to match. So for him to kind of enter the free agency, which could have been awful, as it's been for many players, and come away with that deal, I think he's definitely a winner.
Most definitely. And when I look at this Thunder team now, I know that they're still young, but I'm starting to think they're going to try and start competing here because, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's deal's kicking in, his max rookie extension first year. That's, you know, starting this year. You have Lu Dort, who just got that big, big time payday there. You go undraft Chet Holmgren, who's looked, you know, solid in his first couple of games. You know, there's a lot more, you know, talent there. Josh Giddey, who, you know, was in the rookie of the year race last year. So they're starting to stack up some real talent there. And what are you going to do with all those picks? You're eventually going to probably ship them out and try and get some solid talent once those guys start to learn to win. So they're set up very, very well. And I know that a lot of people, you know, are down on the quote unquote tanking strategy. I get it. I'm with you too, because I don't think Philly won anything out of that either, except for Joel Embiid. But I will say the way that the Thunder are doing this, they're acquiring assets, but they're also building on that by bringing in young talent like this. And for them to sign Lu Dort to that contract, for them to do what they did with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, it's telling me that they're starting to gear up to be ready to compete.
Yeah, and I mean, with how Chet Holmgren has looked in summer league, it's very possible this team could turn some heads this season. Yeah, the big question
too, he's real young.
Yeah, the question is, when do they flip that switch? When do they go into competitive mode? And they already, I mean, made one trade on draft night that involved three, you know, first round picks. So they're definitely going to start wheeling and dealing and use some of those picks, you know, using some picks for different deals, because there's no way they can, you know, use all those selections in the draft. So I'm very curious to see what the future holds for OKC. I think they're definitely one of the most exciting young cores to kind of keep an eye on. So yeah, I definitely have Lu Dort as a winner, and I don't hate it for OKC either. It's not like, oh, they overpaid and Dort, you know, robbed them. I'm not saying that. I think it's a great deal.
17 to 18 million. I mean,
yeah, great for both sides.
This podcast is brought to you by Branded Bills, the best place online for premium headwear and apparel. Branded Bills has hundreds of designs available, including their popular state collection, where you can show your pride with hats, shirts, hoodies, and more for all 50 states. Are you a company looking to brand your business? Branded Bills also offers custom apparel options that can meet your brand standards with fast turnaround and shipping. To shop or learn more, visit brandedbills.com today. That's brandedbills.com.
Now, again, we're going to transition over to losers here. We each chose four. I want to add the caveat that this is early. These are premature projections, but it's just based on kind of what's happened so far. You know, we obviously entered free agency with certain expectations, and for some guys or teams, it didn't really live up to what we thought it was going to be. So let's talk about our losers. And look, some of this could be totally wrong. We could be looking at this a few years from now and we got it all wrong here. But I think I'll start. I think it's pretty safe to say the first loser is the Brooklyn Nets and Sean Marks and what's going on there. And I don't think Sean Marks is necessarily, you know, 100% to blame. Some of this is on Kevin Durant, on Kyrie Irving. But just the whole situation has to be chalked up as a loss, and they're really struggling right now, I'm sure. Last offseason, we wrote an article at basketballnews.com where Sean Marks was quoted saying, extensions for KD, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving are signed, sealed, and delivered. Basically said they're going to get them done before training camp. It was a formality. Marks was confident they were keeping all of those guys. Wow. Now, fast forward a year, KD is on the extension, but he's requesting a trade. Kyrie did not sign an extension, and now his future's up in the air, and it seems like he'll get traded somewhere and moved on. James Harden's in Philly. So just to kind of see where they're at, I feel bad for Nets fans too. Like, I'm not saying they're a loser. I feel bad for the Nets, for Sean Marks, for their fans. It's just kind of brutal what they've been through to kind of go from being on cloud nine when you assemble this trio and thinking we're going to be contenders every single year for the next X number of years to now everything's up in smoke. You don't have your own first round picks, as we mentioned. So it's not like they can even rebuild properly. You know, this is a team that's going to be probably struggling through 2027. And then finally they can get their draft picks back at the end of this decade.
But so, I mean, won an all-star player in return.
Yeah. I mean, again, picks. It goes back
to both,
like,
of them. I want Cat and Ant and a first round pick.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I'm curious to see what they can get back for KD. I mean, they can kind of salvage things a bit if they can get a ton back for Kevin Durant. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, it's really it's impossible to get equal value for someone like Kevin Durant. But, yeah, you know, can they get creative and find a three-team deal where
it'll take eight picks?
Yeah, it'll take eight, nine picks, something crazy like that. Like, that would obviously restore their, you know, their draft capital. That would help them significantly. But yeah, that's the big question. Kind of what do they get for KD? How does this all unfold? So there's still a lot of ifs here. We'll see kind of what's next for the Nets. But as of right now, just the fact that they thought they were going to enter the season as a contender with KD and Kyrie, and now for everything kind of be up in flames and to not have any of your draft picks because you went all in on this duo, that's pretty brutal. It kind of reminds me of when the Clippers had Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. We all talked about that nightmare scenario where they're on short-term deals. You give up all these first-round picks. You go all in on this duo. If they wanted to leave, then we all talked about, oh, the Clippers are going to be screwed for years. That didn't happen to LA, but that's kind of where the Nets are right now without any of their own first-round picks and now all of their stars moving on.
At least Brooklyn has gotten, you know, a couple of good signings in the last few days. You know, TJ Warren bringing him in. And Edmund Sumner, somebody I think that a lot of people forgot about because he's been hurt, but very, very, you know, solid guy that you can use for depth and is quite athletic too. So between him and TJ Warren, you bring Royce O'Neal in. If they keep KD and they keep Kyrie, I actually like what they brought in, but we just don't know yet, which is why it's tough.
Yeah, it's funny too, because that Royce O'Neal trade, you can throw that into the mix as another reason you can list them as a loser because it feels like that trade happened
very random
before Kevin Durant kind of asked out, because you wouldn't make that kind of move and trade a first round pick for a guy like Royce O'Neal if you're about to be rebuilding. So it almost seemed like they made that move and then KD came to them and said, hey, I'm requesting a trade. And you're like, well, shit, you couldn't have told us that an hour ago before we made this trade, giving up one of our first round picks. Like, so I think that move, it kind of just lumps into the mess that they're in. But I agree with you. TJ Warren was one of my favorite low risk, high reward signings entering this offseason. Like, I was very curious to see where he was going to land because the last time we saw him, he was fantastic. So I don't hate what they've done as far as free agency. It's more of just the situation as a whole and kind of where they find themselves. So that's we had to mention the Nets here. Obviously all eyes are on the Nets right now. So it's clear they're a loser, but we'll see if they can salvage things and get a nice return for KD and Kyrie. Who's your first loser?
First loser for me, but first of all, I do want to preface, we don't know what Kyrie and KD are thinking because I don't think they know what they're thinking yet. So don't ask us yet because it's gone radio silent from what the reports are saying. But my first loser here is actually the Bulls. And reason being, okay, so you get Zach LaVine on his, you know, big time deal. You know, happy for him. That's great. And you obviously, you know, have Lonzo Ball coming back. Patrick Williams is going to be healthy. Alex Caruso. It was a fun team. I don't like the status quo thing. Goran Dragic, that was actually a big surprise to me that he ended up going to Chicago instead of Dallas, as everyone pegged him to go, you know, with his buddy Luka. That's a solid move. Goran Dragic, solid move. Andre Drummond for the value, the $3 to $4 million that they signed Andre Drummond for, good move. I just have him as a loser because I just don't think running it back with the same roster is the right call. I think they could have gotten into the Rudy Gobert sweepstakes. I think they could have maybe tried to find a way to get, you know, maybe a little bit more defense, rim protection and such.
DeAndre Ayton was a possibility that was thrown out there as like a sign.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. So more of a loser, maybe in hypotheticals. But I just don't think they were active enough. How about that? I don't think they were active enough.
Yeah. And I know, you know, they had come out and made some comments that, you know, people in their front office had talked about really being active and aggressive and swinging for the fences. We saw it last offseason with the DeMar DeRozan and Lonzo Ball signing trades, going after Alex Caruso. So
Vucevic at the deadline that year.
Yeah, they've been very, very active. So we'll see if that changes during the season. Maybe they're going to make some midseason moves and try to wheel and deal. But yeah, I think a lot of people were expecting, you know, at least one trade, maybe some bigger signings, but you know, I don't necessarily hate it. I think they're going to get healthy. You know, last year, obviously they were that without Lonzo Ball at the end of the season. Caruso missed time during the year. Like maybe they're just thinking, hey, if we have some continuity, some better chemistry, bring everyone back, we can, you know, live up to our potential as the, you know, everyone kind of melts together a little bit better. So I get what they're thinking. And then if it doesn't work out, that's when midseason, maybe you go and look at some possible trade opportunities. So I see what you're saying too, but
yeah. And for me, I think it's, you know, DeMar's get a year older. Okay. I think that's going to be tough to replicate what he did last year. He was outstanding in the first half of that season. It's just going to be tough to replicate. I think, as he gets older, he's got to be what, 32, 33 now, maybe 31.
Sounds right. Let me look,
but he's getting older. 32. I think,
oh, he's about to be 33 on August 7th, though. So, yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Is Lonzo going to be the Lonzo that he was before he went down? You know, he's, you know, at this point in his career, we know that he's pretty injury prone. Let's be honest. Like, he's a really talented player and he's a great defender. He's solid, solid in open floor, just finding guys down the floor. But like, just for me, and especially knowing how the East has become really, really aggressive in making moves, that to me doesn't sit right, because you kind of have to try to keep up if you're in that timeline. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The one thing I'll say is, because I thought they were going to be the team that landed Rudy Gobert, the return that Utah got for Gobert makes me like question it a little bit more. Like, if we saw the Timberwolves acquire Rudy Gobert for two draft picks and a player, then I think everyone's talking about, man, why didn't Chicago, you know, pull this off? There were the rumors that they didn't want to part with Patrick Williams, and that was like the sticking point in their negotiations. So if it came down to, hey, you could have had Rudy Gobert if you just traded Patrick Williams and Vooch and one or two draft picks, I think that's one thing. But when you see the return that Utah was able to get, you know, I think a lot of people, I don't think it was an overpay, but I've seen a lot of people talking about it being an overpay.
Lots of picks.
Yeah, it's a lot of picks. So I think that's where, you know, it's hard to blame Chicago, because if you were going to have to beat that offer, that's going to take a lot. You know, you're definitely including Patrick Williams. You're including probably that many picks or close
to it. Io would be in the deal. I'm guessing Kobe would be in the deal.
Yeah. So yeah, I think once we saw, I think the Rudy Gobert thing was exciting when it was a hypothetical, but when you actually see what it took to get him, I kind of understand a little bit more from Chicago's standpoint. So I agree with you. I'm curious to see what they do during the season as far as like mid-season moves and upgrades. Because I think as of right now, I don't think they're a legitimate contender just as currently constructed. They're a really good team, but you know, are they one of those top five, top seven squads? I don't think they're in that mix. So we'll see what they can do to kind of get to that point, or you know, what they have up their sleeve. I think my next loser is someone that we've already mentioned, DeAndre Ayton. It's really tough kind of what he's going through right now. He's obviously still out there, but the market for him is just brutal. I think going into this offseason, the narrative was, can you believe the Suns didn't extend this guy and give him a max deal? He was just the second number one overall pick. Anthony Bennett was the other that didn't get that max extension. So people were wondering, what are the Suns thinking? And then the thought was, okay, well, he's going to have interest from Detroit and Atlanta and Indiana, and like all these teams were mentioned. And now one by one, those teams have kind of dropped off. Detroit made other moves. Atlanta doesn't seem like they're in the mix for him. Now it really comes down to Indiana, and I guess Utah has been linked to him since trading Gobert. But entering this offseason, all the talk was about how he was going to get a max deal. And now there's been questions about whether that's the case. The chance of returning, or the possibility of returning to the Suns, seems like it's off the table. I mean, there's been reports from Woj and others that both sides want to move on. It was interesting. Even before free agency started, Woj reported that the Suns didn't view him as a max player and wanted to sign and trade him. So, I mean, they basically, even without really knowing the options and what it was going to take as far as an offer sheet, kind of came out from the gate saying, we're not going to sign this guy to a max deal and we're going to try to move him. We've also seen stuff from Brian Windhorst that they feel like they can replace Ayton's production, or close to it, with minimum and replacement level players, you know, mid-level type players. And we've seen them try to do that. They re-signed Bismack Biyombo. They've made some other moves to kind of give themselves some depth. Dario Saric is going to be back from his injury. So they feel like they're the same team without Ayton. And that's pretty crazy to me. I think what it tells you is centers are the new running backs. We've seen in the NFL, running backs have the hardest time getting paid. Even when they put up, you know, good numbers and seem really talented, teams are basically like, okay, well, we can just replace your production with a mid-round draft pick or a guy that we sign for much cheaper. And they believe it's more about, you know, the system and the pieces around them than that player's talent. So it seems like we're kind of seeing the same thing in this situation where the Suns think they can replace him pretty easily. You know, we saw last year, there were times that JaVale McGee, Bismack Biyombo, even Jalen Smith before the trade in little stretches, you know, played really well. And Chris Paul, there's no question, Chris Paul throughout his career has helped so many centers get paid and put up big numbers and produce at a higher level than expected. So I get what the Suns are saying, but I think if they think they're going to get the same production from, you know, these players they did from Ayton, I think they're making a big mistake. And I'm kind of just surprised to see what the market is for Ayton right now. You know, I thought there'd be more interest for a player of his caliber. What do you make of the whole Ayton situation?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm surprised as well. You know, San Antonio was one of those teams that we thought might pony up an offer, but we just know where they're going. They're looking at going after Victor Wembanyama. So like that right there took out a landing spot. Detroit, when they made that trade with New York to take on all of those contracts, pretty much took them out of the running. You have Indiana, who has cap space, and that's apparently the team that's most, you know, in on Ayton, according to Windy. So we'll keep our tabs on that.
By the way, like, Brian Windhorst is a winner of free agency too. the memes are amazing.
They are.
His performances on ESPN.
Northeast Ohio native, right there. That's good stuff, man.
It's so cool because he's one of the nicest guys in this industry too. Like, obviously, he does a fantastic job, and I love his analysis, and he's super connected. But also, just like one of the most friendly guys that I've come across in this industry. Like, even back when I was starting my career, he was like one of the first national big time guys that was cool to me. So you mentioned him. I had to throw it out there. He's also a winner.
Sure.
That's my guy.
I started where he started, man. Akron Beacon Journal. Shout out. But
that's awesome. He's the man.
Yeah, no, but the Ayton situation, it just sucks, man. It's just a restricted free agency thing. Hopefully, you know, he ends up getting paid at least a decent amount in a sign and trade situation. I'm still mind boggled that the Nets don't want him in a KD deal. That makes no sense to me whatsoever. But
I think I feel like when the Suns chose not to extend him, it kind of raised red flags around the NBA. Like, okay, well, you spend every day with this guy. You know, what do you know that we don't? You don't want to pay him the max? Like, that kind of scared other teams, I think. And we also saw last year during the NBA Finals run, or 2 years ago at this point, there was talk about Ayton's motor and how Chris Paul and Devin Booker had to kind of stay on him about his effort and things like that. So I wonder if they're just teams are kind of looking at the things that have come out of Phoenix where, okay, you didn't extend him right before free agency started. You said that you don't view him as max player and you want to sign and trade him.
Yeah.
And
a really good segue, Alex. I mean, the Suns are one of my losers.
Let's get into it then. Cause I think we kind of covered all the Ayton angles here and it's just surprising that he hasn't gotten more love. And, you know, this could still work out for you. I do want to say it's possible he still gets a max or near max deal from Indiana, either by signing an offer sheet or they're, you know, included as a third team in a KD trade or something like that. So it can still work out. But as of right now, it's been a really rough start to free agency for him. But yeah, let's get into how the Suns have handled this because, you know, again, they could have extended him a year ago and they're probably in a very different situation right now. Thoughts on kind of what the Suns have done and why do you have them as a loser?
Well, I have them as a loser, one, because they don't have a backup big.
That's a problem.
That's a problem. And they might not have a starting big, Alex. So who are you gonna throw out there to start?
What I'm hearing they have
Bismack Biyombo.
Doc Landale?
They have Bismack Biyombo. Okay. That's probably who you're looking at as their quote unquote starter right now, unless you want to go real, real small and you play a Cam Johnson or you play a Jay Crowder. Okay. Ish Wainwright, somebody. He's a free agent, I believe, but somebody
didn't
that
they trade for the guy Jock Landale?
Yeah, from the Spurs. Yeah.
So there you go.
He's you know, been up and down with some Aussie teams, and he's part of the Aussie national team, the Boomers. So, you know, no disrespect, Jock Landale, but they just don't have a starting caliber center. And that's a problem. So that's why I think it's in their best interest to do a sign and trade with Indiana. You go out and get Miles Turner. He's more of your type of style of a center that you want. He's going to stretch the floor. He's going to block shots. I think that's more of the fit for them. But if they don't do that, then who the hell's going to play the five? Dario? Dario's coming off of an injury. Can you really trust that? That's my problem. And now, I mean, your backup point guard right now, you lose Aaron Holiday. Is your backup point guard going to be Landry Shamet? Is it going to be Campaign again? Are you going to trust him after the regression that he had in the second season? They brought in Damian Lee and Josh Okogie. That's their moves right now. So I think that this is very delicate as a loser because we don't know where it goes. But for me, pushing your chips all in on KD, I get it. But things are happening and you're running out of time.
James Jones is playing a very risky game right now because if they land KD, then okay, this offseason's a huge win. You have KD, Devin Booker, Chris Paul. That's a great core. You can surround them with, you know, talented free agents that you kind of bring in, and guys are going to want to go play there because, you know, it's a contender. You got a great core around you. Weather's great. There's a lot of reasons that you'd want to go there. But if they don't land KD and you lose DeAndre Ayton for either nothing, if he signs an offer sheet, which by the way, Ayton has so much power right now because he could literally go sign an offer sheet with Indiana, and that really screws Phoenix because they're trying to use him in a three-team deal or flip him in a sign and trade so you can get some assets back to give Brooklyn. But you know, Indiana's interested from an offer sheet standpoint. So that could be, that's something to watch too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if they don't get KD and you lose Ayton for nothing, then we're talking about this team got significantly worse, and it's possible they still have other moves up their sleeve. Maybe they go and add some pieces, but you look at the remaining free agents, like who's even out there that they can go after?
You could go after Montrezl Harrell, but he's obviously stuck in some, you know, legal issues at the moment.
It would have to be a trade though, I think, to really improve.
Hassan Whiteside's been a starting, you know, like, but yeah,
that's a huge step back. The market's buying out. Right. That's a huge step back for Phoenix. So I think it's very risky. I mean, yeah, just the way they kind of handled the Ayton situation is pretty shocking to me.
And they, you know, they made his value worse.
You devalued him. You devalued your own asset.
And they devalued, you could say the same thing about Jalen Smith. And then they
I totally agree. So the Jalen Smith situation is interesting because Evan Sidery just wrote about this at Basketball News, how, you know, he re-signed with the Pacers and, you know, he looked great in Indiana. He didn't play much in Phoenix because, you know, they didn't really have time to develop him. They were a win now team. So I get that. But the whole Jalen Smith situation, it just kind of, it shows that James Jones and the Suns don't really value centers because, you know, initially it was kind of a shock when they drafted him at number 10 overall. It was kind of considered a reach, but then when they declined his third year team option, that devalued him and made it harder to trade him, or, you know, if they didn't trade him, he would have been unrestricted and would have just left. But that was really shocking. He was only the third lottery pick since 2009 to have his third year option declined. So it's the same thing. Like with Ayton, why didn't they extend him? Only the second ever number one pick. With Jalen Smith, why didn't they pick up the option? It's, you know, so rare to see that happen. So they're devaluing their assets with some of these moves that they've made. And then when you trade Jalen Smith, you get Torrey Craig, but they had to attach a second round pick to Jalen Smith, a guy that was the number 10 overall pick 2 years earlier. Like, that's crazy. So yeah, I think
he looked good.
And he looked great. And he scored in double figures in 18 of 22 games after landing at Indy. He had shown flashes in Phoenix. So, I mean, I think that James Jones has made some moves that devalue his own assets. And I think James Jones is a really good executive. I think he has a great eye for talent. And I think he's really, really good at the relationship side of things. And I wouldn't be surprised if, like, he's talking to KD right now. I don't know. That's obviously tampering. I'm not saying I know that for a fact, but I think he's awesome when it comes to recruiting. He knows everyone and is super respected. And he built a really good team in the last few years. So I think he deserves credit. But when it comes to his asset management skills, I think there are some things that, you know, there are some issues that have kind of popped up, and it's in more than one situation. So I'm just curious to see what, you know, happens with Phoenix. Like if they get KD again, all's kind of forgiven. You have a loaded roster. You can probably make it work. If they don't get KD, I know Suns fans are really scared of kind of what this team's going to look like, because are you just basically replacing DeAndre Ayton with Bismack Biyombo? Like, that's a very different looking roster, I think. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, it's very dangerous right now, kind of the game that James Jones is playing.
Thanks to Yerba for sponsoring this episode. Yerba is a naturally caffeinated energy drink that's made exclusively with recognizable plant-based ingredients. There's no sugar, calories, or sucralose, so you can feel great about what you're drinking. Get the energy you need without the jitters or crash. Check out yerbae.com for 10% off. That's yerbae.com for 10% off.
My next loser, and I kind of feel bad about my next two losers here because I don't hate where they're at as a franchise. I don't necessarily hate, nothing that happened is necessarily their fault. Like the Dallas Mavericks come to mind. Losing Jalen Brunson for nothing is rough. And there's definitely going to be a tampering investigation into the Knicks signing because they had, it seemed like, a whole contract worked out before free agency even started. There was
should've
no meeting
chairs in the guy's apartment, just like a few years ago, man. It would have worked.
100%.
Stack charge, chairs in there and don't let him leave.
Yeah, pulled another DeAndre Jordan. But no, I mean, the way the whole situation played out, it's kind of unfair to the Mavericks. And I feel bad for them because it seemed like, you know, they went and hot, you know, we saw they clearly wanted Brunson. They were scouting him in the playoffs. They hired his dad. You have a whole agreement worked out before the free agency period even begins. So there's going to be an investigation of that. I would not be surprised if the Knicks get, you know, punished a bit. But you can argue that, you know, not only do they lose Jalen Brunson for nothing. Again, there's people arguing that they overpaid JaVale McGee. I think they'll be fine in the long run because this core is very talented. They're getting some pieces back. I think, you know, that Spencer Dinwiddie move looks great last year, since now they're going to need him to step up even more with Brunson gone. You know, they'll get Tim Hardaway Jr. back, who was injured last year. They added Christian Wood via trade, and I think that was a great, you know, move for them. He could really help them.
Jaden Hardy, baby. I'm excited to see this kid play.
That was such a steal for them. Like, you know, I was very surprised they were able to get him that, you know, for barely, you know, I was surprised he was available at that point in the draft, and then they got him for very little. So great move there. They just haven't been super active in free agency, and losing Brunson is pretty significant. So again, I don't think, I'm not super against what they've done this offseason as a whole, but if you're talking about free agency losers, they're probably up there. And I guess since this other team's kind of lumped in the same boat, I'll mention them too. The Warriors, they lost several key players. Gary Payton II, Otto Porter Jr., some others. They signed Dante DiVincenzo to a bargain deal, but he solid hasn't looked move the same since his injury. So I like that move. If he gets back to his, you know, form we saw in Milwaukee before his injury, then that's a great pickup, especially the price they got him at. But he just hasn't been very explosive. He struggled in Milwaukee after the injury, struggled in Sacramento. So, you know, we'll see if he can kind of pan out there. But kind of like the Mavs, I think they're going to be fine because they have a great core, obviously. They're defending champs. They have young players who can step up into bigger roles and kind of, you know, make up for the players they lost. But if we're grading them based on their free agency period, it's been rough. And I mean, we see that every year or most years where a champion, guys win a championship. They show what they can do on that huge stage in the playoffs, and teams come calling because they want to sign them away. They're impressed with their game. They want that championship experience. Like, it's pretty hard for a championship team to kind of bring everyone back. So it's not a huge surprise, but I think some of the losses are pretty significant.
Happened with Milwaukee too last year when they lost PJ Tucker, and that didn't work out well for them, obviously. But it's hard to retain all those guys. And now the Warriors are going to put their eggs in the baskets of Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody and the returning, hopefully, James Wiseman. So
who might be playing in summer league. They're
all right.
Their summer league coach said that he might be making some appearances during summer league. So that would be pretty exciting. Something to watch for sure.
And Patrick Baldwin Jr. too, who they drafted, was before the season started, that was considered a lottery prospect. And they ended up getting him at the tail end of the draft. So we'll see what the Warriors development staff can do there. We obviously know how good they are at just preparing the next generation. But I think it'll be fun to see some of these young guys get some minutes because of who they've lost.
Yeah. And to be clear again, you know, the Mavs and Warriors are going to be fine. They have great pieces. It's just when you look at the free agency situation, it's been a bit rough on them. But who were your final two losers?
My final two losers. First off, you mentioned DeAndre Ayton. I got to go with Colin Sexton. I love this dude. I think he brings such a tenacity to the floor. I think that he was a huge missing piece from the Cavs last year, especially in the second half of the season. He was just somebody that was able to get a bucket when they needed it to. Instead, you know, Darius Garland had to have the ball in his hands 24/7. He was playing entire second halves of games. And you saw down the stretch, even though they had made this, you know, miraculous run in the first half, you know, they lost Ricky Rubio. They tried bringing in Rajon Rondo. They tried making it work with Caris LeVert as these main ball handlers. But Darius was really the only one who could do it. So I think Colin Sexton is somebody that the Cavs missed sorely. But for him, just the market has dried up so much. Draft night after that, I think it was pretty clear that it'd be tough for him to get a good, solid deal. You know, there's not a lot of teams with cap space. You look at the ones that do have it. San Antonio, again, I don't know if they're exactly, you know, trying to win now. And Colin seems like a win now piece. San Antonio, too, you got to think they're going to want to get minutes for guys like Josh Primo, who they just drafted, ironically, out of Alabama, where Colin Sexton went. They've got Devin Vassell. They've got Romeo Langford, who they traded for last year. Brought in Malachi Branham in the draft, Blake Wesley. So that guard room filled up real quick. I thought that the Pistons might have interest in him before we got to the draft. And then they went out and found Jaden Ivey. And they have Sadiq Bey, and you have some of these guards, you know, coming off of the bench that are going to give them some solid minutes. So I don't think he's a landing spot for Detroit or anything like that. Indiana, maybe, you know, but from the sources that I've spoken to, honestly, man, they think that he's going to end up back with Cleveland, possibly on the qualifying offer. It could be a one-year deal. Who knows? But it's just that the money dried up real quick, and it sucks. Again, this goes back to restricted free agency. You look at Sexton, man. He came into this season so motivated, and then he went down seven games in. And then he was forced, while he was rehabbing. By the way, this dude was dribbling a basketball in a wheelchair, for goodness sake. Like, he cannot get enough of the gym. But he was watching this team have success.
Yeah, that's tough.
And that just sucks for him, man. One, you miss out on your payday because you couldn't get a deal negotiated with the team that drafted with you. And two, you miss out on all the fun.
Yeah.
So he's going to be super motivated this year. I think he ends up back up in Cleveland on 1 year, probably the qualifying offer. Then you go back into free agency next year, unrestricted, after you prove yourself, after you, you know, really show what you're capable of as that guy that goes and gets buckets and puts pressure on the defense. I think that he's going to be due a solid, solid payday next offseason. But for now, I think he's back with the Cavs.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. You know, entering free agency, just kind of looking at the different destinations. We actually, I think our Evan Sidery wrote an article.
Washington was on that list too. My apologies. But Washington, they went out and got every guard possible. They drafted Johnny Davis. They brought in a guy like Monte Morris. You know, Will Barton plays that position. Sometimes he'll play the three, obviously, but they kind of addressed their guard room pretty high. DeLon Wright, they just signed. So that is already gone too.
Tommy Shepard had said, like, hey, our starting point guard is going to be someone we either sign or trade for. And everyone's like, oh, well, you try to get Tyus Jones, you failed. You couldn't trade for Malcolm Brogdon. Maybe it's Colin Sexton. And yeah, they found other players to kind of step in. It's possible they could still throw an offer at Sexton, but it seems like he'll be back in Cleveland, which is interesting. You know, I like that for the Cavaliers, kind of play him in that sixth man role.
They're going to be deep at that guard position, bro.
He can provide some scoring off the bench. I don't hate it for the Cavs and then for Sexton, a chance for him to kind of show what he can do and show that he's healthy. And maybe next offseason he gets that payday he was looking for. So,
and there's a chance he has that starting job over Caris. Who knows? It'll go through camp. Dude, that guard room is absolutely packed now. It's Colin Sexton. It's Caris LeVert. It's Isaac Okoro. It's Ochai Agbaji. They just drafted. You know, they have a ton of guards. They brought in Raul Neto. They brought in Ricky Rubio. Like, that's a very, very crowded guard room. It's going to be some really solid battles in camp.
For sure. And who's your last loser?
Last loser for me, for obvious reasons regarding Miles Bridges that we won't get into. Just absolutely terrible situation. But we have the Hornets here. You're losing one of, you're likely losing one of your, you know, top, you know, guys. It's best the way I could put it. You went out and addressed the center position by drafting Mark Williams. I get that. But again, kind of similar to what I said about the Bulls. If you're trying to take that next step, the East is getting better and better by the year. It was one of the better conferences in the league last year, and you're just not adding to it. You're not adding to it, and you're keeping the status quo. And this is very interesting. We'll see what happens with Obviously, the Miles Bridges situations. But if you lose out of Miles Bridges, he shouldn't be playing a game again, by the way. But yeah. With the Hornets, I mean, you gotta find a way to continue. And, you know, actually more or less to that point as well, I just don't get bringing Steve Clifford back. It just does not it does not fit this roster whatsoever. I know you want him to play defense. I get that. But it just does not make sense to me. It's a retread. I have a lot of respect for Steve Clifford. I think he does a fantastic job with some of these teams and almost is an overachiever. He did it with the Magic a few years back too, with the Fournier, Vucevic, Gordon teams. But I mean, this just does not make sense to me. He's not an offensive coach. So that also is a part of why I'm not the biggest fan.
Yeah, it really seemed like their whole thing was, obviously we know they wanted Kenny Atkinson. And then when that fell through, it was basically, okay, well, let's go with someone that we're comfortable with. We already have a relationship with. I don't know, maybe Mike D'Antoni was asking for more money or more control over the assistants.
Because Kenny Atkinson turns it down, goes back to Golden State because he's just looking for the right fit.
Yeah, and apparently Atkinson, they were kind of, messing with his coaching staff too. They were either trying to control the assistants or trying to lowball, you know, the assistant coaches. So Atkinson basically said, no, I'm just going to go back to Golden State.
And that sucks because he was so perfect for that.
He was perfect. But that's where I kind of feel bad for Charlotte, because some of the stuff, I mean, clearly if there was issues with the assistant coaches and kind of how they handled that, then that's their fault. But, you know, there's a world where Kenny Atkinson accepts the head coaching job and you hired the perfect coach for this young core. There's a world where Miles Bridges isn't an idiot and a shitty dude. And, you know, you have a star player. In the day before, 2 days before, they were like, he's a huge part of our team. We're bringing him back. It seemed like they were going to get a deal done right away. And then all this comes out. So a lot of stuff hasn't been necessarily on the Hornets, but you're right. Just considering all the circumstances, they're kind of in a rough spot now.
Can we put an extra losers on the Hornets young players? Are we going to see James Bouknight play at all? Are we going to see Kai Jones play at all? Is JT Thor going to see a minute this year? Like, we know the types of players that Steve Clifford favors. So yeah. That's the other part of this for me.
That's a fair point. Well, I appreciate you breaking this down with me. We'll see. We got to revisit this in a year or two and see see if we were right about.
We should listen to the first one. We should listen to the first one that we did in 2020. I bet you would be fun to go back to that.
Maybe on YouTube we can do a reaction where we like look back at what we thought and whether if we were right about certain things, what we were wrong about.
Oh yeah,
that'd be a lot of fun.
I'd have to have some liquor in my hand for that.
Everyone, make sure you're following Spencer on Twitter at Spin Davies. As I mentioned, he does a great job for us as an editor and a writer at Basketball News. Check out his podcast, Keeping It 94. He does an amazing job with Brian Fritz breaking down the latest things in the NBA.
Get well soon, Brian, by the way. That's the reason we haven't been doing podcasts. He had a little bout with COVID. So, you know, hopefully he feels a little better soon and that will be right back up top.
100%. Get well soon. And yeah, everyone, make sure you check out that podcast. It's great. Keep It 94. And if you want to hear more episodes of this podcast, check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen. And until next time, thanks for listening.